Hello and welcome to the very, very first edition of PI in a Pod, our brand new podcast. Today I am joined by two very special guests, Hugh Nolan, the President of the Society of Pension Professionals. Hi.
Hi.
And Rosalind Connor, a partner at Ark Pensions Law.
Hello.
And we're here today to talk about Brexit. Now, obviously, with the Brexit referendum just a couple of weeks ago, this is an issue that's at the top of everybody's minds. But what does it mean for pensions professionals, and what should our pension fund trustee and scheme manager audience be thinking about? So let's start. I think, Rosalind, you know, obviously you're a lawyer and you've got very good legal insight. What do you think are the legal issues here, and what should trustees be thinking about from a legal perspective?
Well, from a legal perspective, it's an awful lot more boring than people are suggesting. The EU really operates through legislation, and the law that it passes generally are organised such that you have to pass the law in the UK as well. So if we were to vote to leave on the 23rd of June, actually the end result will not be that lots of laws cease to exist. Most laws will continue until and unless the government gets rid of them. And you then have to ask whether they will. From a pensions point of view, in fact, most of our law is not European. In fact, the European law on pensions is very light. It's taken them a long time to get any law at all, because it's hard to get agreement because the systems are so different in different countries. And in fact, when the pensions directive was passed, most of it actually covers stuff that the UK was either already doing or planning to do. So most of our law isn't European in basis. The things that are things that you would expect people to want to leave in place. There's an argument that the scheme funding regime comes from Europe, although it was clear that something like that was going to be put in place and there was a previous regime anyway. And actually, I think most people would say, you know what, that's not a bad regime. It works. Everyone understands it now, leaving aside any other sort of political changes that might come on scheme funding. As a mechanism process, it seems to be one that most people are pretty happy with. The other area which is obviously affected by Europe in a big way really is employment-related legislation, and in particular discrimination legislation. Trustees, of course, have to worry about things like age discrimination. We all know that they have to worry about sex discrimination because that's where the Barber case comes from and the equalisation issue. But most of that law, we either had that kind of law already in the UK, or we probably would choose to have it anyway. I suspect there are very few people in this country who will want to repeal much of the Equality Act, which is the one that effectively says you cannot treat people differently based on race or sex or sexual orientation or age. And that, I think to most of us, I would hope, seems pretty obvious. So really, from a legal point of view, trustees need to be aware of what's going on, of course, but the law isn't going to change very much. It's probably the other things around that, particularly areas like investment, that the trustees need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I think that all makes sense. So basically, from a legal perspective, you know, not that much to change, not that much to worry about. We'll probably keep the same laws we've already had. Investment's an important issue, and I think it'll be at the top of most of our listeners' minds. And Hugh, I think you know quite a bit about this. What should trustees be thinking about from an investment perspective? Obviously, volatility, not great, but volatility is happening regardless of whether or not we stay or go for the time being.
Yeah, so until the 23rd of June, we are going to have huge volatility in the market, if that's understood, and we've seen that already, both in terms of currency, stock markets, gilt yields down to their lowest level over 10 years that we've ever seen. I think there's some excellent research from Old Mutual Asset Management, the report that showed the impact on investments of European income, basically. So the companies that are listed on the UK stock market, of course, derive a lot of their revenue from Europe and overseas. And the figures are quite interesting in terms of seeing where we get our revenue streams from, but also interesting in terms of which industries are particularly exposed to European revenue. So you look at someone like telecoms, and of course Vodafone is one of the biggest stocks on the stock market in the UK. Telecoms very exposed to the Europe continental market. FTSE 100 companies, of course, more internationally based than smaller employers. So you can see that a Brexit would affect different types of companies in a different way. Bigger companies more affected by Brexit, more internationally based companies like telecoms more affected by Brexit.
That makes sense to me. And I mean, is there anything that trustees should be doing to protect against that volatility? Like, what kind of actions can they take?
I think most trustees will find their investment managers will be doing that for them. So at the end of the day, you pay investment managers to invest in various stock markets. And if you've got a brief or a mandate for an investment manager to look at your UK stock market exposure, they may well be taking views here behind the scenes and saying, you know, we're worried about Brexit, we're going to take a little less exposure to some of those that would be badly affected if Brexit does go through. And we'll take, you know, we'll put some more money into those stocks we think would do well in the event of a Brexit. So, you know, that will be happening behind the scenes. I think the difficulty is the market obviously prices in the expectation already. So unless you have a particularly strong view that everyone's expectations of whether or not there will be a Brexit vote, you're really betting against that market. And it's a little bit of a mug's game to try and bet against what people are thinking is a general point. And for a trustee, it's quite hard to take a gamble on something like that. I think already we've only got 2 weeks to go. I think it's a bit late to make any dramatic changes. But I do think there are some employers and pension schemes who've taken a bit of a gamble on the stock market doing well. Who maybe have still got time just between now and 2 weeks away to have a look again and say, are we happy with the risk we've got? We were taking this level of risk a year ago, where the market's been a bit more volatile, with a potential shift up or down on the 24th of June. Are we still happy to play that bet? And it may be that people are, and maybe they say, actually, we'll just take a bit off the risk off the table at the moment and put it back again in a month's time when things are settled down slightly.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me. And then I guess, you know, there's the question, on the 23rd, I mean, I think most people seem to think that we're going to stay. I personally think it's going to be closer than that. But what happens? What happens if we do leave? Rosalind, are there things? What should we be thinking about then if it's a go situation?
I have to say, the most important thing really is that it's not something where you should make too many decisions in advance. I think it comes back to Hugh's point about betting against where people are. Anybody who is telling you right now that they know how the legislative framework is going to be, or how the markets are going to behave, or how rich or poor we will be as a result of the vote on the 23rd, is doing an awful lot of assumptions. And I think we have to be ever so careful that trustees don't allow themselves to be caught up in this. To an extent, they have to do a bit of a wait and see. I don't think it's consistent with trustees' duties to be jumping in too fast into knowing what the answer is. Hugh's absolutely right. If you're betting against the market, for instance, is a risky line to take, and therefore not really consistent with trustee duties. So I think trustees really have to take this at a moderate pace. What I am pretty sure of is there will be an awful lot of pundits, as there are already, out there telling us what's definitely going to happen. The papers will be full of clear analysis by very good people, but that doesn't mean it's right. And trustees, I think, have to be ever so careful not to get themselves caught up, not to find themselves dealing with experts coming in and saying, if you pay me a fee, I'll be able to deal for you with all these changes that are definitely happening. We need to wait to see exactly what happens. The vote, I think the vote either way, I agree with you, it's likely to be close. The vote either way is going to leave a degree of uncertainty, a large degree of uncertainty. There are all these talks about the different Brexit models and what model we might be on. And we are likely, I suspect, to be on one of our very own. But no one knows what that is yet. And this is not the same as Scotland leaving the Union, where actually it was pretty clear what the legal structure and framework would be, because there really was only one way to do it. There isn't that same clarity here. There are so many different ways things could operate. And I think anybody who is sure on the 24th of June just doesn't really understand the depth of the complexity.
And I think there's also a political point there, that the uncertainty about who would be the next Prime Minister kicks in as well. That a Brexit vote might well trigger a leadership contest. A narrow win for the Remain contents could still be the same thing. And you could see a challenge to David Cameron's leadership. That uncertainty will still be reflected in the market. But what I'd say, straight after the election, straight after the referendum, in a position where the markets might react immediately to something, either positively or negatively. And I just caution no knee-jerk reaction to that situation, because what you might find is that markets normalise again a little bit. It might be a swing immediately and then it settles down. I wouldn't want trustees to be panicked by something. For me, it's about seeing which ways it could go, make sure you've got the appropriate level of risk and managing that, and having an idea in mind about what you're going to do. What you shouldn't do is say, well, we think we're going to remain, so we're not worried about stock market volatility much. We think you might get a kick in the stock market. And if you get a Brexit vote that knocks the stock market down a bit, if that did happen, then you wouldn't want to say, oh, we mean I'm going to run for the hills, because you might find that waiting 2 or 3 days, it settles down and you don't lose quite as much money.
And I guess there's uncertainty even if we stay, isn't there? You know, people talk about the uncertainty of what leaving might do, but there's uncertainties that lie with the Remain vote too and what that might
bring. Absolutely. And in fact, part of the political message on the Remain campaign is, you know, we are getting ourselves into a better place with Europe. Well, that is an ongoing negotiation, which may or may not succeed in various areas. And there are some things that actually the UK has always been good at doing differently from the rest of Europe, and quite successfully. Where you exactly end up is not at all clear. And again, if it's a close vote, that increases political pressure, particularly if there's a leadership challenge, to maybe run a vote again in the future. This isn't something, and again, to compare it to the Scottish referendum, which I think people sort of take a bit too much comfort from, it was very clear that the union was saying, you've got one shot. If you vote to leave, you can, probably. If you don't, you can't, and we're not going to talk about it again. And in fact, whereas the SNP has done very well since the election, I don't think anybody expects there to be another referendum quickly. But it's a very different thing here, because this is something that is and will remain a very, very hot political issue. Winning the vote for the Remain campaign does not stop there being another referendum, does not stop the UK leaving Europe. It just means that the process of that happening isn't going to happen straight away.
And the closer the result, the more uncertain there's going to be.
Absolutely.
Either way.
And do you think it's likely, if it's a close Remain vote, do you think it's likely we'll see another referendum?
I don't know. What does interest me is when I have spoken to Europeans, particularly people in the, if you like, the core original EU group, the sort of Benelux and Germany and France, there's a strong feeling of, brutally, we'd really, really like Britain to just make up its mind and either stay and properly participate, because we don't feel they do, or leave, and that's fine, we'll still trade with you, but stop whinging. Stop standing there saying, be the kind of person we want to be or we'll leave. You sound like an angry boyfriend. And I think there is a bit of an antipathy within some of the very pro-EU core European countries to what's going on in the UK. And so it is a moving situation. I think anybody who said if we voted to remain that there won't be another vote in the next 5 years, say, I think is being quite brave. I suspect it's quite likely that it will come up one way or another. Neither side, as you said, if it's close, that's very difficult. Neither side wants a close vote. So if whoever wins the vote on a close vote probably wants to have another vote later where they win properly, because it's not going to feel very comfortable if it's a kind of 52-48% vote.
Yeah, do you think it'll be close?
I think it'll be very close. I think the odds that the bookies, which is always a good guide, suggest strongly a Remain vote. The market seems to be factoring a Remain vote. But perhaps because the Leave campaign is very noisy, and the whole thing is very passionate, and on both sides there are strong voices, I think it gives you a sense of a closeness. And I think it could come down to a simple thing like what the turnout is. I suspect the people who are interested in the Leave campaign are more committed to that position more passionately, and there might be a bit more inertia to maintain the status quo. So if it rains on the day and people say, I can't be bothered going to vote, maybe get a different result.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. I think it's going to be that close and that down to the wire, which I guess means, from what we've been saying, that what trustees and scheme managers need to be aware of is there's going to be a lot of uncertainty, and it's not short-term uncertainty either. There's going to be a lot of long-term uncertainty. What do you do in situations like that? Is it just talk to your advisors? and make sure they're on hand.
Plan for all scenarios. Yes. So it's about saying, you know, this is our strategy in the central situation, and here's what we're going to do to take account of that. So you talk about investments and funding. You don't know where the market's going to go. You know there's going to be some volatility. That can actually work really well for trustees. Because if you actually are looking at a situation where a lot of schemes are currently investing in the equity market to try and make a turn against gilt yields, if you've got that position happening, then with markets bouncing around all over the place, there's opportunity to take profits. So what you want to do is get up a system that's set in advance saying, if the stock market rises to a certain level relative to the price of gilts, we'll sell a bit. And then when it goes up a bit more, we'll sell a bit more. And those strategies are really effective because it means that you can immediately capture value in the market rather than having to wait 3 months to have a discussion about it at the time. So it's plan in advance, see what you want to do strategically, and put in place measures to make sure it happens automatically when the time is right.
So trigger investing, that's
trigger investing, absolutely.
That makes sense. And
I mean, I think it's very important for trustees in these situations where there is uncertainty, yes, to talk to advisors. Also, of course, to talk to the employer. We haven't spoken really about the sponsor covenant because that's another big thing where there's uncertainty. So you were saying right at the beginning, you know, that's very industry specific. Mm. There are businesses which are much more likely to be winners or losers, depending on which way the vote goes. Not all businesses are going to react the same. It does depend where their markets are. And speaking to the employer, understanding the employer's contingencies is incredibly important at these times. And you know, if your employer's answer is, don't know, we've not really thought about it, then that's probably a red flag all by itself. But most employers will have thought about it at some length, will have thought about how their business will be affected by it, and in fact be able to talk about it. Trustees really need to just get as much information as they can, make sure they are talking to people, and speak to their advisors. But as I say, if you suddenly have an advisor say, I know a great guy who, you know, knows exactly what's going to happen on the 24th of June after the vote, then you may not want to pay that person a lot of money until we see which way things go.
I think that's fair enough, and I think that's kind of in line with what I'd expect. And you know, I guess that most trustees will have already spoken to someone, right? We'd expect people to be out there having those conversations.
I think trustees of big schemes will certainly have had those conversations. I think at smaller levels, you quite have the trustees know the company quite well. It might well be the finance director or the managing director sits on the trustee board. So they'll at least have an understanding of the position. Even where you don't have that direct link, people who work in the industry or have worked in the industry over the past years will know how it's going to be affected by Brexit to a great degree. They'll have a good view where it stands. They'll know how big the scheme is relative to the company. And we've seen that with BHS, where you've got a very big scheme relative to the current size and profitability of the company, and therefore the scheme can't be supported by the employer in difficult times. So you can see where the risk might lie for your own scheme, I think, quite easily. The question is really what times can you do much about it?
Yeah.
So it certainly seems to me that if your employer is badly affected by a Brexit vote and that's the way it goes, then you might want to be saying, you know, let's be careful about what you spend now. It might be you need to give them some slack in terms of investing to change direction slightly or to try new product lines that will be more effective in the new world. Or it might be that you've got an employer who does really well out of Brexit, in which case you can go back and ask for a bit more contribution to the pension scheme because they'd be better able to afford it.
Of course, if you are the JCB pension scheme, you'll know exactly what it's going to do because every single employee received a letter telling them from the chief executive. But a lot of businesses, you know, they'll all have had some kind of analysis. So there should be, you know, the information out there if you need it.
And I guess, I mean, like, if you're really, really worried, speak to the regulator, is that...?
Yes, I mean, it's always, you know, the regulator is a great resource for trustees who are perhaps not getting any traction with the employer. I think one of the things a regulator has developed a great skill in is making the employer come to the table, largely just by bombarding them until they give in, which is actually, at the time, I think a lot of us thought it was really annoying, but it's been really, really effective, and I think several of us have over the years used that tool to get the employer talking. Is the regulator going to be able to tell you what you should do about Brexit? Absolutely not, and nor should they. That's not their job, that's not their role or their expertise. But if you're not getting the traction from people or the information that you need from other people, then the regulator is the party that can get people moving. And some of the regulator's powers are actually quite easy to use for them, and some of them require a lot more effort. But the ones that are effectively around demanding information for people from people are very easy to use, and they use those quite a lot.
I say there's a lot of resistance in the market to approach the regulator. It feels almost like you're running to teach it.
Yes.
But I think I've certainly seen no evidence you should be aware of engaging with the pensions regulator. They may not be able to answer your questions, but they'll at least try to help out and put you in the right direction. They've got an excellent website with great material on for trustees that sets out their duties and gives you a good first port of call for what you should be doing and how you should be doing it.
Yeah. And is there a concern? If a scheme is owned by a European company and we leave Europe, does that throw up any extra challenges in terms of regulate how far the powers of the regulator extend or anything like that? Is there something we should be thinking about there?
I mean, there is an issue with enforceability overseas. The powers of the regulator, the powers of trustees and of other people to get money out of companies not based in the UK is always challenged by the problem of jurisdiction, of being in the wrong jurisdiction. And it is, there's no question that for certain claims it's much easier across the EU because there's something called the Brussels regs, which effectively allows, if I was suing you personally and you'd gone to live in France, I could sue you in the French courts and say, look, I've got an English judgment, and the French courts would say, fine, we'll enforce it because of this legislation. Now, that actually works a lot less well, ironically, as a thing for the regulator to use, because that's not a private dispute, that's something involving a public body. So it's a very different situation. But, of course, we do enforce judgments in lots of countries. There are lots of business in the UK with US parents, Commonwealth parents, and there are usually good agreements for enforcing these types of things in other jurisdictions which are used to the rule of law will tend to enforce a normal judgment against people based in their country. So, yes, it is, there will be places where it's harder, but I've always found on the analysis of this, people in the end say, you know what, if there is an order outstanding in the UK to seize your assets, the only way you can avoid paying that is to never ever have anything go through the UK ever again. Yeah. And that is actually quite hard for an awful lot of businesses. Do they want to have their goods seized off boats that dock in Southampton for 10 minutes? Well, probably not. And that does an awful lot more damage than just paying the amount. So I suspect from an enforceability point of view, it won't have that much effect. What it will probably do is have effect on people's confidence.
Yeah.
One of the great advantages of the Brussels regulations is that people don't understand that nuance. And they tend to say, oh my God, my European countries will be at risk from the pensions regulator, my ones in America are fine, which is probably not true. But doing that, of course, means that the European countries, companies in your group, are much more willing to put money into the pension scheme because they're scared, and they may well become a lot less scared if we're not in the EU.
Okay, that sort of makes sense. What else? Hugh, I mean, I know you guys did some research on this. Is there anything that came out of that we haven't really touched on or that you think that our listeners should hear about, would like to hear about?
Well, there's two particular things. So the SPP, Society of Pension Professionals, is driven really to try and bring our professional expertise to bear in a neutral way and just do the facts as they used to say on the TV show Dragnet. The report we did tried to highlight what people would say across the piece, and we've tried to build on that. So we look at things like changing gilt yields have a big impact on funding levels. And from publicly available information, you can look at the fact that a change of 0.3% in gilt yields would affect UK pension schemes deficits by about £70 billion.
Thank you.
So it's it's clear that a small change in gilt yields could have a big impact on the funding level. Now, what we haven't done is predict which way that would go. We'll leave that to the economists and the different speculative views that people might have. We don't think it's possible to say for sure which way that would go. What we're trying to do is highlight that that's a significant area. You've obviously got to put things in the context of not the £350 million per week that's claimed that goes to Brussels, but the net spend is something approaching £10 billion. So what we're saying is that even a small impact on pension schemes would swamp that in terms of the effect it has on UK pension schemes. It would take you 8 to 10 years to cover the impact on pension schemes, just a 0.3% change from that contribution. And obviously, you know, the nervousness is you can't spend on the NHS and on protecting farmers and on covering pension schemes as well. So it's one of those where if it goes the wrong way, it's a significant impact. One of my favourite hobby horses, GMP equalisation, mm-hmm. very important to those of the industry.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that this is not an indication of how well we don't deal with Europe. We have a rule that says we have to treat people equally, and then we seem to in the UK get very uptight about exactly how we should do that. We don't say we'll get it somewhere about right and live with it. We've got to get it absolutely nailed down, and the suggestion is that we've still got £10 billion of liabilities to go up from that. So £10 million is not trivial, but equally, it's only the one-year net contribution. It's only a 0.5% change in gilt, 0.05% change in gilt yields would have a bigger impact. So whilst it might make my life a little bit less happy to have to deal with all that administration, it's not really a big deal, economically speaking.
Yeah.
And then you move on to what else might have an impact. So suggestions of a drop in GDP. If we did have a drop in GDP after a Brexit vote, that would obviously reduce the ability of companies to protect their pension schemes and to meet the deficits that have arisen over time. And then you get into the sort of the nuclear scenario that Ian Duncan Smith has highlighted, about a £450 billion extra liability that could fall onto UK companies to have to fund their pension schemes to the solvency level that's been envisaged by European discussions. And I think there's a couple of points there that spring out. One is that, yes, it's fair to say that could happen and we can still find ourselves pushed that direction in future. But the latest engagement was that with the UK having by far the biggest defined benefit funded pension scheme arrangements, we've made representations, we've worked with European partners like Ireland and the Netherlands, and we've won the argument that that funding is not to be required, it's just to be disclosed. So there is no immediate prospect of that money being needed. And even if it were needed, you're in a position where it's actually to bring schemes up to full funding. So you'd have your Tata Steel, you'd have your British Home Stores, you'd have your Halcro pension schemes, which would actually be in a position where there'd never be a risk to the PPF, there'd never be people losing out of pensions. So although we might have to put some more money in if the European Union ever forced us down that route, which seems unlikely, but if they did, we'd have to put some money in to make sure that no one ever fell short on pension again. You know, from that point of view, it's a nightmare scenario one way, but on the other hand, it's actually for a good purpose.
For pensioners, it'd be good. For companies, it might not be quite so good.
And again, you've got to wonder whether or not it's realistic to expect companies to pay that and over what period they could do so. So you look at BHS, they had a 23-year recovery period for their existing funding plan. If they'd had to make that up to what it would take to get to full funding on a solvency buyout, you're looking at 50, 60 years.
Yeah.
So the problem is well down the road in terms of when it would actually hit UK balance sheets.
Yeah, okay, that's a draw. And I guess the question of this last question, I think, the question of future EU regulation is one that we haven't really touched on. We've said that not much will happen in terms of changing laws that have already been made. Is there stuff coming down the track that we might avoid by Brexit or might miss out on by Brexit?
In relation to straight pensions legislation, obviously we've got IOPS 2 on the way, and as Hugh said, it was very clear by the time we got that actually the whole concept of Solvency 2, of being subject to the insurance level of solvency, had been won, if you like. No, everyone was understanding that private pension plans are not the same as commercial businesses and you shouldn't have the same standards for them in funding. Actually, when you look at it, it's relatively mild. Again, it's very high level. It talks about things that actually Britain is probably already doing. It's unlikely to make radical changes. But that's because there have been trying to be pensions directives for about 25 years, and it's always very difficult to do it. People try to do it the same way as they've done insurance directives, but that work, and banking directives, but those work the same way in each country. And pensions really don't. They're radically different. So I take a view that the straight pensions legislation, we're going to have moved to largely a single economy before that's really, really impacting. Where we do get hit by legislation is legislation that's about other things, which will apply to pension schemes as much as anyone else. The really big thing that's coming in at the moment is the new legislation on data protection. Now, data control, data management, data security is a massive issue for pension schemes. They've got a lot of information, some of which is immensely sensitive, about people's sexual orientation, about people's medical health.
Sure.
These are things people do not want to be public. And the requirements are really quite severe. And they were designed with in mind the issues like those of online databases and big data worries, and does Facebook hold on to your pictures of you being fat, even when you've lost the weight and you don't want them there anymore. And that legislation really doesn't work terribly well for pensions, which are doing something different. So I think the new data protection legislation is going to be a real problem for pension schemes. And I think Brexit would avoid that. And as I say, lots of UK law, which we're not really sure about what it means because we're not quite sure how the underlying EU law works, GMP equalisation being a really obvious one there.
Yeah.
But various other ones along the line, the age discrimination regulation carve-outs, which probably aren't valid. All of that goes away if we're not in Europe. We can just make those laws what we want them to be.
Sure.
Which I think just gives a lot more certainty back. There are a lot of areas where pension lawyers make a lot of money because we have to advise clients that we don't know what the answer is, and no one knows what the answer is until we go to Europe. Those questions can be answered a lot more quickly and a lot more cheaply once, if we were to leave the EU.
Interesting. Right, I think that's probably all we've got time for. If you're going to leave our listeners with one final thought or one piece of advice, what might it be? Rosalind, I'll come to you first.
Don't make any decision too quickly. Let's wait and see what happens.
And Hugh?
When you're trying to make a decision about how to vote or what to do about it, look at the facts as best you can and try and interpret them in a way that makes sense. So for me, the Treasury report that said each pension loses £140 a year through the loss of the triple lock benefit in real terms, that's less than £3 a week, but there's 11 million of them, so it's £1.5 billion a year. Try and put it in context of what you're talking about. £1.5 billion, a lot of money. £3 or less a week, not so much. Adapt the figures you hear to what makes sense for you.
Thank you very much. Well, I'm Sarah Bunwell, the digital editor of Pensions Insight and Engaged Investor magazine. This has been the first ever episode of PI in the Pod. And thank you to my guests and also to our listeners.